Cemetery Affairs budget and incorporated in the 84 budget. There's objection for questions. Representative Duncan.
Mr. Chairman, I just wondered if we could take about 2 minutes.
Sure. We'll take a 2 minute recess. Would finance come to order? Representative Duncan?
And Mr. Chairman, object just for a couple of questions.
Sure.
Just to be sure.
And Representative Ward has a question also. Representative Duncan.
I understand that the motion, Representative Martin's, was to adopt the military affairs budget.
Well, fiscally.
According to what's on this cut sheet, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. On the House side, House numbers, right?
Those numbers pertain to those budget components.
That's correct.
Chairman, this came out just. Is that going to be standard, or are we going to have an opportunity?
Yep. On the subcommittee, you'll have 24 hours, such as last year's and the previous year's, to look at these. That is why I made the announcement earlier. You have the governor's cut sheet available in my office. You'll have 24 hours before these cut sheets are completed.
We will have that now on.
Yes.
Case. It's not your intent then, just so I understand the process that you're going to use, not your intent to go through these budget categories component by component to set figures. It's your intention to take a motion, and if we have any changes we want to make, we have to object and then make amendments to that motion. Is that the way you do it?
On the harder operation categories is we will need to go agency by agency or division by division. I will allow amendments made or motions of amendments made, and it takes 6 votes to change anything the subcommittee has done. You will have that option. We will stop and go and to any page you want to, using the cut sheets and also the short forms or any material you would like. Okay. Representative Duncan, Representative Zaroff, you also have a letter with, I think, the dates that I plan to close out these different categories. But I did announce 2 changes earlier. Further questions? Representative Zaroff? Representative Ward?
I'll state the problem again. There's a constituent of mine that has just retired after 20 years service in the Alaska National Guard, and whether the whatever feels that it's a nominal fee, there is a $100 retirement per month being offered to this and being received by people now, and it's come to my attention that they have requested that there be some form of mechanism set up to where instead of $100 a month for a retirement, which doesn't go very far for retirement, that a mechanism at a reduced cash basis be offered within a formula to be maybe to be worked on. What I'm doing now is I'm asking you under your retirement benefits right now, since if during the interim before we see you next year, if you could work on a formula to where the people that are getting retirement benefits, if they could get, instead of the $100 a month, if they could get a cash dollar amount, of course being reduced because most people won't live very long after they retire anyway, that's one of the myths of retirement, but so they can be benefit, because $100 just really is totally inadequate as far as being able to eat for more than 3 days a month, and I would hope that you would do that, so next year when we talk, we'll be able to work on legislation and maybe do something like that to help people out that are serving our state.
That's a comment. Representative Duncan, for the comments.
Yeah, one question, I guess, of Mr. Roundtree, probably, if I yes. Could. In the governor's amended budget, what he has done not only in this budget category, of course, but in others, is to take an unallocated reduction, in this case of $95,000. The House proposed budget doesn't allow that unallocated reduction, of course. Could you tell me, the governor must, or the administration must have some idea of where they were going to take that reduction and which component in military affairs? And I'm just interested in if that reduction was allowed, what did the governor intend to reduce?
Mr. Roundtree.
Okay, at this time, we have not identified where that unallocated reduction would take place. We are certainly working on it. At this time, all our program managers have been tasked by our commissioner to go forth and see if they can take further cuts and what effect it will have on them if they do.
How was the $95,000 arrived at as a figure for a reduction in military affairs?
I believe it was about 1.5% was the percentage used on that.
That standard percent for all agencies, do you know?
I understand that for the majority of agencies it was that, depending on priorities.
You were, are you in a position of stating what you would have recommended as reductions if you were to do that?
As being a department employee, and one of my prime responsibilities is the budget officer, I am in a position to make recommendations to our commissioner's office on where I think there might be possibilities. We've gone quite a ways down the road with these cuts already, and to be real truthful with you, we have to analyze programs and see which programs are going to suffer if we, you know, we take the cut.
I guess the point of my question is, you know, that it's an unallocated reduction. Someone must have an idea of where that cut was going to be. How quick do you intend to, or would you intend to have recommendations on where that reduction would come from? Is that something that you thought would wait until after the legislature adjourned and then you would make those reductions at a later date? Or how?
My understanding, due to the decline in revenues, this was an unallocated reduction which would be made up sometime during the fiscal year 84. Not identified right at this time this week. That's something we figured we were going to have to eat somewhere along the line.
Further questions, Representative Duncan? Objection maintained. If not, motion passes to adopt Department of Military Affairs and place this into the operating budget. Is there anything further to come before House Finance? Thank you, gentlemen. Bob, thank you. You got one, two.
Hey, Freddy.
Would the House Finance please come to order? This afternoon, our first item we're going to take up is we're going to close out the governor's FY84 budget. Then the bills we'll take up are in this particular order: Senate Bill 142, House Bill 125, House Bill 68, House Bill 42, House Bill 309 is on hold. I'm going to bring that back up next Tuesday. Then if time permits, we're going to go to House Bill 180. You have before you the operating budget. Representative Lindahl, you are chairman of this subcommittee. Your presentation, please.
Mr. Chairman, the subcommittee, looking at the budget of the Office of the Governor, has recommended a subcommittee budget of $16,766.4, just under the cap which you gave us of $16.8. We have recommended following basic changes in the amended submission of the governor. We recommended that the Council on Economic Policy funds of $100,000 be moved to the Office of Management and Budget. The testimony at the hearing on that subject confirmed that the Office of Management and Budget would be the primary user of these funds, and that the reason that they wanted them intact was so they could fund long-run economic studies. In the Office of Management and Budget, primary deletions were the Council on Science and Technology. It had not been funded in the current year. There had been a proposal to bring it back in. the subcommittee recommends that it continue not to be funded. Another major deletion as it relates to data processing. Subcommittee, which is also the subcommittee handling the Departments of Revenue and Administration, recommends that data processing be reduced substantially, 56.3. We have also recommended an expansion of the governor's office, Kotzebue, expanding it from a part-time operation to a full-time operation to reflect the fact that that's a regional center. We deleted the same overall criteria that are being applied to all agencies across the board in the budget this year. That is to say, we deleted the increases based on inflation. We, conforming to the rest of the House, deleted 50% of all our equipment requests. We reduced 1983 travel by at least 10%. And in general applied the same standards that are being uniformly applied under the budget preparation rules which the committee gave us. I might note that the general reductions have been applied to every agency here and every commission with one exception, and that is the governor's own budget, the budget of the executive office, has in no way been touched. It has not been subjected to any of the rigorous scrutiny reductions that have been applied to those administrative units which are only under the governor's budget for the purpose of administration as opposed to being part of his personal operation. If you have any questions, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions of any of the members regarding the office of the governor before I start making some amendments? Representative Martin, then Representative Duncan. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the executive office, and I understand that, but we have 24,000 increases. Is this?
Yes, that is the that is changing the Kotzebue office from part-time to full-time. That required $24,000 increase.
Wasn't there a request also that the governor expand in the Bethel area, that they needed a new position there recently?
Representative Martin, there were many requests for additional spending.
I thought that wasn't what's going on. Okay, thank you.
Representative Duncan.
The Office of the Governor?
Yes, it is.
Yes. When did the subcommittee meet and finalize this recommendation?
We met virtually constantly and discussed these changes as we went. This information was shared back and forth and discussed among members. We did not have a formal meeting. There are three members that did this, the Representative Gall, Representative Ewling, and myself, and all three of the members, I believe, concur in this.
There was, Mr. Chair, in fact, there was then no formal meeting where an actual vote was taken as to whether the subcommittee was recommending this level of funding, and therefore there was no actual meeting where the subcommittee members
We just all agree.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my point is, that's what I understood also, is that there was no formal meeting, and I would hope that perhaps you would direct the subcommittees to hold a formal meeting where they actually report the budget out, report a subcommittee recommendation. It really causes us serious problems. For example, there are areas, as this thing's worked through, where we finally would like to make some recommendations to the subcommittee before it comes to the full committee. And if there is not a subcommittee meeting, we don't have that opportunity. And that does concern me.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to interject that we held very detailed hearings on this and the various parts of this budget and the other budgets of this subcommittee. We've conducted very extensive hearings, and I believe that you were represented. You had an aide at every meeting.
Representative Duncan.
Chairman, my point is that before the final recommendation is made, I think the subcommittee members should be meeting and reviewing that and reporting that out. For example, let me just ask this of Mr. Lindauer. On the component here for salary and benefit increases, the subcommittee recommendation is zero on that?
Yes, and that is consistent with the overall instructions, not only for the units administered by the Office of Governor, but for all budget units, including administration, revenue, HESS, everything.
Mr. Chairman, was there an opportunity, did you hold a meeting once that decision was made? Did you hold a meeting so an opportunity would have been given to a member of that subcommittee to make the motion to include that $38 million in the subcommittee report?
Did we hold a meeting? Obviously we didn't, not for that purpose.
I think that's my point, Mr. Chairman, is that as I understand the process, you would like a subcommittee report to come to the committee, which I agree with. However, I think every opportunity should be given that subcommittee members or other members could go to that subcommittee and ask that items be included.
It leaves us
no option now but to make that motion here in full committee, of course.
Yeah. Representative Duncan, they will be voted on subcommittee levels. If they're turned down, then you also, as a minority member on this committee, you also have that option to make amendments here, not only here, but on the floor.
Chairman, I understand that, and my only point was that the subcommittee members did not have an opportunity in this case, and I'd hope that you would direct subcommittees to hold formal meetings prior to reporting the budget out.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to comment on that from our own experience operating as a subcommittee. It seems to me that once the basic principles for the budget of the state are established, it would not be wise to have each subcommittee attempting to challenge the basic principles that are being applied elsewhere, because if we were to include something which everybody else thought should be excluded, we would be going on forever in this budgetary process. The basic procedures, if I might briefly inform everyone, is that we took out per instructions those increases that were related to inflation, in part because of testimony that the inflation rate in the state of Alaska had dropped close to zero. Secondly, we reduced all the equipment requests automatically 50%. We took travel at 83 levels less, at least 10%, because of the excesses in travel. Data processing, which only affected a small portion of this budget, was reduced at least 20%, and the contractual items were reduced 10%, except where there was overt testimony that there were excesses, in which case it was more than 10%. I believe these are being applied by all units, aspects of the budget. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any amendments before I start with mine? Any of the committee?
I have some, but I'll wait till you start with yours.
Thank you. On page 8, under executive officers, decreased by $150,000 to eliminate funding for the National Communications Program, which is in contractual, moving a new number of 5131.9, and I ask for unanimous consent.
Yeah.
There's objection. Is there debate?
Chairman, could you explain to me exactly the effect of that motion, what the $150,000 was intended to do?
This $150,000 was to use to bring congressmen here to Alaska. I believe that funds can be utilized from the governor's contingency fund to take this. Mm-hmm. Representative Duncan.
Could I ask, perhaps prior to acting on the motion, would it be possible for a representative from the governor's office to speak to...
Is there anybody here from the governor's office that would like to respond to this? Ms. Herman?
Page, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, for the record, my name is Laurie Herman. I'm with the Office of the Governor. The $150,000 appropriation that's listed under the National Communications Effort, I think, is probably not titled correctly. There was about a $500,000 appropriation last year to fund the National Communications Effort, which in review of that program, we determined that probably for the money expended, the citizens of the state probably didn't get a lot of value for it. About 2 months ago, Senator Stevens and Murkowski visited with the governor, several members of his staff, and several commissioners, and indicated that several years ago, there was a program undertaken in Alaska whereby the state invited to Alaska members of the U.S. House, members of the U.S. Senate, and some key staff members. The federal government paid their airfare to the state. The state picked up the tab for air transportation within Alaska as well as their meals and lodging. They did not fly throughout the state on commercial carrier. They chartered smaller aircraft so that they could get a better idea of what the layout of the state was to travel to smaller communities. We put in this $150,000 as a method to pay for that program.
Thank you. Representative Duncan, further questions?
Mr. Chairman, apparently then the governor, the administration is still supporting this program. They feel it's still necessary?
Absolutely.
Further debate? Representative Zaroff.
Mr. Chairman, can you read that amendment again, please?
Yes. Under page 8, under executive office, decrease by 150 to eliminate funds for the National Communications Program. It's in contractual. That's why it just shows it's hidden in contractual. Representative Duncan.
One further question. As I understood your motion, you were eliminating it here and by motion directing them, if they were to do the program, to take it out of the contingency fund?
That's correct, Representative Duncan.
Could you, the contingency fund recommended level $750,000, how would that impact, in your view, that fund?
In reviewing the history just a short while ago for the contingency fund of FY 81 and 82, if my memory serves me correct, Representative Adams, I think you've got a copy of it. It was both years they were almost fully depleted, in fact, 1 year over so. In FY 83, I think we have a balance on hand of about $290,000. Most of the requests to the governor's contingency fund are shortfalls from agencies for unanticipated costs, and it's really difficult to determine how that's going to impact it because the money is traditionally spent on things that are unexpected.
What was the level of funding, do you know, for fiscal year 81 and 82 in the governor's contingency fund?
$750,000
for each year.
Each year.
It was depleted in those 2 years.
Was FY 82?
That's not correct. It was not depleted in each year. There was a balance left in 82 of, he spent $498,000, and FY 81 he spent $900,000 over the amount given him, Representative Duncan.
So it averaged out that they were depleted in both years. So.
Is there any further discussion on my motion? Representative Ward.
Yes, if I can just for clarification, since you're familiar with this 500 and now down to 150, or what was it for duck hunting or something? Because I never saw any congressmen up here.
No, the $500,000 was not expended for that.
Oh.
That was a national communications effort that was undertaken, I believe, in... the latter part of FY 82.
Is this for hunting trips or what?
No.
What's
the $150,000 that
what
we are proposing,
uh-huh.
It's for an informational program to bring congressmen, senators, and key staff people to the state to allow them to learn a little more about us. On the advice of Senator Stevens and Murkowski, evidently this was a very successful program several years back. It's their feeling that there's been a large enough turnover that it would be an excellent program for us to undertake again.
Right.
I don't believe there are any hunting and fishing trips.
Well, several years, we've all been here several years. I don't ever remember them. What did they do when they came up here?
Visited various parts of the state.
Where?
Well, I'm sorry, I can't answer that.
They must have missed Mountain View, Alaska.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Herman here, I realize perhaps there might be some value to congressional junkets around the state here, but in looking at the capital budget for fiscal year Chapter 84. I see that perhaps this money might be better used by members of the governor's staff, like Mr. McDowell and perhaps Mr. Crawford, to go out there and see exactly what's happening out in the rural areas. So perhaps you might want to reconsider your priorities of who's doing the traveling, and then not necessarily congressmen, perhaps some state people.
Sure, I'd entertain any. Bring them all up here. Representative Lindau, would you relinquish your seat?
I certainly would.
Let me out.
Does look a bit warm.
Get out of that line.
Got out of there.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Peter McDowell, the Director of the Office of Management and Budget in the Office of the Governor. And I would like to add some more material on this, the issue of congressional education. And that is that the 1982 permanent fund dividend, this administration is fully persuaded, is probably going to do more to reduce Alaska's share of the federal treasury than almost any other thing. And I believe that our congressional delegation was offering the governor sound advice when he suggested that orientation of certain senators and congressmen who are, in fact, proposing congressional legislation to do away with Alaska's oil tax capability, among other things, would be an appropriate way to educate them to the fact that Alaska has great needs in its rural and urban areas that we require to be funded by these oil taxes, and that the permanent fund dividend is not the only program that the state of Alaska has. So I think there are a number of points to this particular appropriation that need to be recognized by the legislature.
Representative Duncan.
One other question, just so I, when I was asking about the contingency fund, Ms. Herman said it's in the past it's been used for agency shortfalls and so on. Can you give me a little more information on that, perhaps Mr. McDowell or someone?
I'll respond for you. Let's take this year's. The first item is the budget error under DEC for $23,800, Youth Adult Conservation Corps for $16,000, Alternative Permanent Fund Distribution Plan $35,000, Temple University, Alaska Statehood Commission for $3,500, Internal Auditors for $44,000, Parole Board under HESS for $44,000, Oil and Gas Conservation Commission for $10,000, Community Service Block Program, $50,000, 3 Non-Attorney Alaska Bar Association, $9,400, Division of Housing, $110,000, a Transition Team Expenses for $15,000, number item number 12, 14, and 15 were canceled, Security Guards to Governor Candidates for $17,500, Remodeling of the Frontier Building in Anchorage, $10,700, Youth Conservation Corps for $3,100, Chinigut elections for $10,000, total of $431,000, Representative Duncan. You may have a copy of also what they spent for FY 81, 82, and 83 if you'd like a copy.
I would like a copy, yes.
I have questions over here, Representative Hurlburt.
Yeah, I was interested in what you just said about the permanent fund dividend program. Do you think this $150,000 will buy them off for what our program does up here in the permanent fund dividend? I mean, just to travel up here and show them what our needs are?
Well, I think that any expenditure that's this small that will help counteract the congressional impression of Alaska's relative resource wealth will be money well spent, Representative.
Continue.
I tend to be argumentative. I better not.
Representative Ward.
When this happened, did they ever come up before under this program? A couple years ago, I thought it was referred to. This happened a couple years ago. Are you familiar with that?
I have no personal knowledge of that.
I think
Ms. Herman was reporting a conversation from the congressional delegation indicating that that had been done at some time in the past, but we were not
involved in the government at that time.
So don't know whether it'd be the same guys coming up again or not.
They indicated that the reason for doing it was that there had been a substantial turnover in the people involved since they had done it prior. And that was the reason they were recommending it. So I would assume it would not be the same folks.
Where would be your intention on letting them travel to?
I think we'd certainly bow to the advice, or at least consult, definitely, Senator Stevens, Murkowski, and Congressman Young.
I think it would be important, for example, to select their agenda on the basis of personal observation of the areas that are most heavily impacted by federal spending in Alaska. That would certainly be a criterion that could be utilized to set an itinerary for this kind of a group.
There's, if I may, there's already, as I understand it, two groups of five and plus Secretary of Interior White and three aides that are coming this summer, whether this passes or not. Are you familiar with those trips?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I don't know if it's one and the same, but they're coming anyway.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Representative Martin?
Yes, sir.
Questions on my motion?
Amendment. Yes, sir. Commissioner, the main problem I have with this here, number one, I agree with the congressional delegation inviting their colleagues to the state and seeing the problems that we do have and the major expenditures that we do need to get us up into the modern world of the lower 48. However, I had assumed that some of this would be done with congressional money since they fly to foreign countries, especially poor countries, to see how we can give them foreign aid. And I thought for sure they'd come to this poor territory and on their own money and see how they could help us. This allotment here at $3,000 per person would take care of 170 people. Is there any idea how you're going to spend the money? That's a lot of people coming in. How many did you intend to invite?
Well, Representative Martin, I can't give you an exact number.
The governor himself said to knock down travel, and we're all doing an honorable job on the various budgets to knock down the travel.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McDowell, do you think perhaps it might be counterproductive to more or less pay the congressman's way for travel throughout the state of Alaska when perhaps they may go back with a message that what they got was a trip through the state of Alaska paid by the state of Alaska? We're trying to show a little bit of fiscal conservatism here.
Well, we haven't done a survey of the entire Congress, but I think that we're reporting accurately the views of the three members of Congress that are most knowledgeable about Alaska. This is our two senators and Representative Young.
Continue.
Chairman, from my contact with the congressman that came to the state of Alaska tied in with the D2 question, most of them were very pleased to be in the state of Alaska, and they had a lot of colleagues who'd like to come up there to the state, and appeared that we didn't need to entice them by paying their way. They always seemed to want to tie it in with the good fishing seasons and what else was happening in the state. But I was just wondering if this perhaps might be counterproductive, that we may be putting out the wrong message by paying for these junkets within the state.
As I say, no, we haven't. Apparently, no one has taken a survey of all of the congressmen to determine their views on this question. We are basing this on the views of that represent our state.
Is there any further discussion on my motion? Sir, is the objection still maintained? All in favor of my motion, amendment number one, signify by raising your hand. Opposed? Amendment number one passes. The next two amendments that I'll be making is I don't believe that these two belong in the operating budget. They are capital expenditures. One of them, I will make a commitment that needs to go into the capital budget regarding the executive mansion that needs to be upgraded, but it shouldn't be in this operating budget. With that, under page number 10, under the executive mansion, decrease 143.2 for the mansion upgrade as a capital expenditure, not an operating. Having a new figure, 373.6. I move and ask for unanimous consent. Is there objection?
Chair, I just wanted to be sure that I understood you to say that you do support this item and that you would expect it to appear in a capital budget.
That's correct, Representative Duncan. Is the objection still maintained? If not, amendment number 2 is adopted. Amendment number 3 is under page number 34 under elections. I move and ask for unanimous consent to decrease by $111,700 to purchase ballot voting counting machines, as this is a capital item. And I ask for unanimous consent. There's objection.
Mr. Chairman, the motion was to decrease what line item by $111,000?
It's on page number 34 under elections, Representative Duncan.
Yes. Which line item? Under equipment?
Yes. Is your objection still maintained?
Yes. I guess my question is that you're deleting $111,000. The equipment shows here at $28,000.
It'll be under commodities. I'm sorry.
Commodities show at $20,000.
No, mine show 134.8 under the House.
Chairman, I have a different run, I guess.
Okay.
Underline 9.
Representative Zaroff?
Chairman, I think there might be some confusion. I think I don't have page 34. I go from 33 to 35.
What are you working from?
Mr. Chairman, I have 34 on a run of 4783 at 10:45 in the morning or in the afternoon or sometime.
The one I'm looking at, Representative Duncan, is April 8th, 1983.
I don't have that.
Would you... Do you have another copy?
Yeah, I've got the 7 bowls from.
Do you have your copy, Representative Duncan?
Mr. Chairman, I now have a copy that says that. However, are we working off the same sheet of music here, or is the whole budget that we are working on different than what really is?
The run I've got,
quite honestly, doesn't have any of this.
Yeah.
I was just handed it by Representative Lindauer's aide.
What date do you have on it? You might not even have it in there then. The subcommittee might have taken it out, but I'm still going to maintain that motion. So, Representative Duncan.
Depends on which run we're working off of, I guess.
Okay. I'm working off
on the printout that Representative Lindauer's aide gave me, 4883, it is in there. On the printout that I got from Representative Lindauer's office earlier, it isn't on there. So I guess my only question is, what sheet of music are we working off of, and what's the total budget, and
okay,
what the hell are we doing?
Bill?
Adams, Bill Isaac. We made 2 runs, Mr. Short testified. The first one on 4-7, that item was left off, the governor's amended version. That was the only item of 111.7. He then ran a second run for 8, and it was included on there. I gave Representative Duncan's office that run from 4-7, but I also gave him the page from the corrected document.
The page we got is from 4-7.
That's correct. I gave you...
It's not corrected.
I gave the correct page here.
Mr. Chairman, I am going to object just because I think, one, the information is not clear. But secondly, I again just want to say that I kind of like to know, I might... not agree with you on everything, but I at least would like to know what's going on in the budget. And when I have information that's not even accurate,
your comments are well taken, Representative Duncan. We'll try to, on the next 16 closeouts, that you have everybody have the same piece of music. I know the computer is slowing down a little bit, so that can.
Could I ask a question, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
About your definition of capital with regard to this equipment. As I understand it, most of the pieces of this equipment are very small value items, and not individually don't even hit a $25,000 number. I don't know what definition you're using for capital, but I suspect that this doesn't fit.
Representative Ward and Hurlburt?
I before I vote, I will
the question just sparked my, I need to make something understood. You did not infer that this was going to go into the capital budget, did you?
No, this, I said this is part should be in the capital budget.
But not that it's going to go
no,
in?
No.
Okay, good.
Thank you. A vote punch machine is, doesn't cost $25,000.
Representative Hilbert?
Well, I think the capital should be listed as tangible items like that because we can't list it on call 100,000 small because in my village is $100,000 a lot of money.
Well, I mean, what's our definition of capital? Our working definition is a tangible asset with a life of more than 1 year that costs more than $25,000, and everything else ought to go in the operating budget, just to keep it simple. Now, we got $9,000 machines that we're talking about here, and these are not capital items by any reasonable definition, unless there's something floating around out here that I'm not aware of. So could you define capital, please?
Further questions? Representative Hilbert?
Well, yeah, you call that, would you call that definition again?
Our working definition for capital asset is a tangible asset expected to have a useful life of more than 1 year and costing over $25,000. None of these assets in the list, in this 111,000, cost more than 9,000. So they're operating budget items by our working definition.
I see what you're talking about.
Now, you know, if we have a disagreement about the definition, let's talk about it. But, I mean, we've proposed an operating budget based on certain criteria. And I think that we've made, you know, we've been public about what those criteria are. And if there are new criteria being introduced, well, let's go public with those.
Representative Ward?
Yeah, I didn't want them in operating our capital either one, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Duncan?
Just one question, Mr. McDowell, perhaps. The equipment that's being deleted here, can you explain to me exactly what it was, its purpose, and why it's being requested this year in an off-election year?
There are elections coming up during 1983, as I understand it, and then, of course, there are elections coming up during 1984, a lot of them. And the division wants to get the capacity for ballot punches, 140 new ballot punches in districts around the state where people are presently marking ballots with pencils, out in a timely fashion for the 83 and 84 election seasons, and some counting equipment, so that the certain areas of the state that are now presently punching by hand and counting by hand will be automated by the time the next election comes around. And that's their estimate of the equipment required to service the areas of the state, the election districts that don't have this capability now but do have quite a few voters, is this number. And I'm just saying that the program managers who put this budget together and have to operate their programs have taken a lot of time and care as to how to do this. Now, if we want to set some arbitrary rules about management of the government, well, that so be it. But I want to call to the attention of the committee that these recommendations were not made in haste. And I'm concerned that perhaps certain other recommendations that we're hearing today are being made in haste. And I commend to you a little more thoughtful process if that hasn't gone, such as, for example, full and thorough subcommittee hearings. I've heard Representative Duncan's comments before. I attended one, and I didn't find that the planning that went into that hearing to be particularly extensive.
That's the same thoughts we have also of the two capital budgets that was placed by your agency, Representative, Mr. McDowell.
Stop, wasn't it?
Mr. Chair, Mr. McDowell, then, as I understand, this equipment would be used even in this coming calendar year, despite the fact there's no statewide elections. It could be used for school board elections, local elections, whatever it might be, right? It's just not...
Yeah, as I understand, this equipment goes to the local communities where the voting takes place. Right. This is not equipment to be kept here in the governor's office. This goes to the field. It goes to the people. Now, if you want people, and I believe the Matsu Borough is a classic example, to continue to mark their ballots by pencil and suffer the inaccuracies that come from that,
fine. But the governor's office believes that's not appropriate for people in the state to be to have to go through this when they vote.
Representative Ward, Hurlburt and Martin.
Yes, I'd like to call it to this committee's attention that for $100,000 saving 15 minutes on election night so some politicians can know a little bit earlier isn't in the best interest of the people. And as far as finding more ballots in the Mat-Su, we probably won't have that kind of election again, I hope. But for $100,000 just to shave 7 hours off of an election, it's not a proper thing to do.
Representative Hurlburt. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to comment along the same lines that maybe we shouldn't approve this thing, that maybe on the next election some of the people that mark by ballots will have a little more time to think in the next election before they vote in the dark like we did this last one. Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, on the definition of capital, because I had the same problem in my budget with the university. Now, each university wants so many books, and they're running anywhere from $10 to $50, and some of them under $80. Do I take that as operating per book, or when the University of Fairbanks puts $700,000 in for books? I'm saying now that's capital expenditures. It seems like over the last 3 years, the legislators in their wisdom have switched it back and forth, and the poor university just doesn't know which way to go. But when they lump it together, like UAA wants $300,000 in books, I take that as a capital item. Same way in the governor's office, it's pretty expensive, but suppose you all decided each of your staff needs a car, your key people. So surely you can buy a decent car for under $25,000 for each one. Would that be operating expense? The point is that, as you're saying, we must clarify one way or the other. Do we lump something together as a capital item, or do we spread it out and make sure it's under $25,000, whatever we want to make it?
Well, if I could just bring up another analogy. It's quite often, not often, but occasionally one sees a case where you where approval limits are set, that a person can purchase anything virtually that makes sense up to $2,500, and then has to seek higher authority to approve to purchase something over that amount. Well, every once in a while, there will be an abuse of that rule, and then you will see 10 $2,500 purchases, which in fact make a $25,000 purchase. And when you have an abuse of the common sense that's required to exercise discretion in these matters, you have to go, you hopefully will find it and be able to deal with the people that have made the abuse. But I think we have a case here that apply common sense to any
of
these cases.
It would seem to me that your operating cost looks less, and the public would say, look, the governor is operating for less than before. Could you put your capital where in the long term it's way over 25?
If we don't have any desire to, you know, change appearances, we'd like to set up a set of reasonable standards that can be carried out with common sense and agreed upon, and that are as not arbitrary, if at all possible, that do mean something, and use them. And I'm telling you what we're trying to work with for this year, and this reflects it. These are, you know, big enough individual items that you can deal with them separately.
Is the objection still maintained on amendment number 3? The objection is still maintained. All in favor of amendment number 3, signify by raising your hand. All opposed? Amendment number 3 is adopted. My last amendment is on line number 14 under contingency fund. Move the figure of $500,000 and ask for unanimous consent.
Question.
Is there objection?
Yes, sir.
Did I hear your objection?
Yes, sir.
I heard objection. Is there a debate?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Duncan.
Just so I can understand and keep this perspective, you're proposing a decrease here from $750,000 to $500,000.
That's correct.
After directing the governor's office through a prior motion where we reduced $150,000 to take that $150,000 out of his $750,000, you've already taken $250,000 of his $750,000.
Yes. The reason behind that, Representative Duncan, is because in the last past 3 years, the governor's contingency fund is like a slush fund, and it was used to help other agencies out, and you're welcome to a copy of this, and he can do that. He has a means through a supplement or special appropriation in order to get more money when he has shortfalls. But yet this contingency fund has been a slush fund, and that's why I'm moving it, Representative Duncan. You may have a copy of this.
Mr. Chairman, my only comment would be, I think perhaps, if you want to call it slush fund, I think perhaps that we should leave the governor with a certain amount of contingency funds available. $750,000 doesn't seem to be too high. I mean, all branches of government have these slush funds. For example, the leadership in both bodies has $2 or $3 million available for their contingency fund. And I assume we're going to make like reductions in that then?
Yes, we are. Yes. In fact, the for your question, the legislature budget is requesting 37 million. I'm bringing that down to 30, Representative Duncan.
That will be
in all phases. Further debate on this motion. Representative Hilbert?
I don't think the governor will mind on this. He's got a good suntan today.
Thank you.
Your objection still maintained, Representative Duncan?
Yes.
All in favor of the motion signify by raising your hand. Opposed? Amendment number 4 carries. Is there any further amendments?
No. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Duncan?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a couple questions first, and then I do have an amendment I want to offer, depending on the answer to the questions. First, Mr. Chairman, on page... Page 37 and 38, I guess, are the proper pages. On the area that the governor had included as salary and benefit increases, $38,866,000. The subcommittee's recommendation, I guess, although the subcommittee didn't vote on this, was not to include that amount. Mr. Chairman, what's your intentions with the towards these pay benefits and pay increases? How do you intend to fund these?
Representative Duncan, you're talking about perhaps almost $39 million of state employees' pay raises. It's my position at this time that we leave the option to Alaska public employees either have no salary increases and keep the present employees on board, or else have a decrease in the number of state employees to pay for an increase of the salaries. And that's my position at this time, Representative Duncan.
Chairman, do you view that as honoring the commitment made at the table by the administration with the employee unions?
One of the things that a provision is in there for that is first of all, an appropriation has to be made by the legislature. In the times of declining revenues, we have to take some action as this.
Sir, may I ask the administration's position on this?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. McDowell.
Yeah, I'd like to speak to that issue, if I may. Very simply put, the administration did not ask for anything in the operating budget that it believed that it could do without. The administration went through a couple of exercises to reduce the plans that we inherited from the Hammond administration and have proposed an operating budget that we feel is reasonable and balanced and does reflect the availability of revenues for fiscal year 1984. The administration's position with regard to the negotiated salary increases for state employees is firm, and that is that it is an obligation of the state to honor those agreements in full. We have proposed a budget that does exactly that. We do not believe that it is appropriate for the government to not honor collective bargaining agreements reached in good faith. And there was no discussion during those agreements, as I understand it, of any reduction in employment of one man's job or one woman's job to pay for an increase in salary for another person's job. So I understand what you stated as your position, but I also would like to say that the administration did not negotiate on that basis, and firmly believes that our position is consistent, that the collective bargaining agreements are should be honored by the state of Alaska.
Representative Duncan, you still have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I think the administration's position is clear on that, and I thank Mr. McDowell for making that clear. One question perhaps I could, if I may, I'd ask you. This, of course, is a funding just for the fiscal year 84 portion of those salary and benefits increases. There is legislation which funds the portion retroactive to January, I think it is. What is your intention with that?
Representative Duncan is talking about the salary increase from January 1st of this year till June 30th of this year. That total is approximately $15.1 million. I take no position at this time, Representative Duncan.
You take no position at this time? What's that mean?
Well, I'm still contemplating thinking about it, Representative Duncan.
Chairman, I'd like to make a motion, if I might.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that we include in the House budget under the Office of the Governor the figure of $38,866.3 in the component labeled salary and benefit increases.
I object. Is there a debate? Representative Martin?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, thank you. On the motion made, I'd like to ask two questions, either the maker of the motion or the commissioner.
He's not a commissioner.
Oh. I'm sorry, Mr. Dowell. I'm trying to promote you. The salary negotiation, I understand that evidently APEA wasn't satisfied with this. I was wondering, for a couple reasons, I wonder if you can tell us what's entailed in this. What percentage game we're playing as to the supposed cost of living, what is the true cost of living in Alaska. I heard mention that we're going to give the both birthdays off, and if we're going to give everybody birthday presents by the day off, or maybe that was compromised out, there's some discussion on that. Are we paying for the birthdays, and if that's coming into the salary benefit adjustments here? And then also, what are we doing with the automatic thing that they've always had, meritorious increases that everyone got? I think the last time we ran a tally in 1981, 97.8% of the people got meritorious raises. Is all that included in here, or what sections of it?
Would you mind, Mr. Chairman, Representative, if I asked Mr. Stringham from the Department of Administration to brief you on the details of the contract itself?
No. Director.
This one's
warmer. I'll sit on Lori's chair then.
Looks like it's smoking to me, Pete.
I notice everybody left immediately as well.
Would you state your name for the record?
Yes, sir. My name is Guy Stringham. I'm the Director of Labor Relations for the Department of Administration for the state of Alaska. The incoming administration inherited a number of contractual negotiations that were ongoing. They had been meeting for about 2 months, and there were a number of questions that were raised concerning just in general contractual needs and some of the things that were in the contracts. When the present administration came in, and I was briefed at least on a desire that this governor had to understand more fully the various kinds of problems that were affecting the various contracts and some of the impact that you were discussing, such as merit and other things, he felt, and I think the rest of the administration people who were advising him also felt, that they needed time to really dig in and to understand these various contractual questions. As a result, we were asked to meet with the various unions, all five of the ones that were involved that time, namely the APA General Government Unit, Supervisory Unit, Local 71, who represents the blue and gray collar workers, the confidential employees, and also the public safety employees, who were basically, when we came in, were basically at the end of their particular negotiations, and to try and see if we could gain some time to do some of that research and to come to some grips with policy kinds of questions. As a result, we offered to the unions, which is a standard practice throughout the collective bargaining world, a possibility to gain us some time, yet still recognizing their immediate needs. And in doing this, we offered to them a 5% increase with, as it turned out, a $5 on top of that because of some uniform needs that the public safety employees had, and it became known as a 5 and 5 type of an offer. Basically, we said, if you will leave in abeyance for 1 year the many questions you have in things such as longevity and things such as work rules and the many things that we deal with in a collective bargaining negotiations other than just dollars, if you will leave them, go for 1 year and take this, will allow you to decide what you might want to do with that particular amount of money for your unit. In doing this, each of the groups had the opportunity to decide what they wanted vis-a-vis the infamous birthday which they bought, and it's the only holiday that I know in the collective bargaining agreements of this state, or for that matter anywhere in this state, that has an actual dollar attachment. They actually bought for so much of their 5% that particular holiday, and that's in the book now and is a part of that agreement, which may or may not stand the test of time as we go to the table next year. I can go through, if you would care, each one of those items, but what we did was reduce the 5% by whatever percentage of that money was needed to take care of whatever needs they indicated they wanted. And so we came out with weird numbers like 4.47% increase in the general government unit in the paycheck because they bought certain items which they felt they needed. Longevity differential for certain groups of people, or overtime, or whatever it happened to be. And there's a whole long list, laundry list of these for each one of the units. And each unit did the same thing. They gave the governor and his staff a year's time to try and come to grips with a lot of the problems which you're alluding to here today for a certain amount of money. And that's basically what happened in the contract negotiations.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott. I hate to plead ignorant, but at the same time, I often wonder how these things are decided on. It seems like the upper administration dealing with the regular employees, and they both bargain how much we can get away with. And then we bring in factors like cost of living, and last year the adjustments were 7.5, I believe, and there's no way in this world in Alaska a cost of living around the nation, there's a 3.9. But we know because of the dividend program, because of the repeal of the personal income tax, because of the good decrease in property taxes and all kinds of things, people in Alaska at long last are having a stable cost of living at almost zero, if not decrease. But yet the only ones that keep on using that as a bargaining power for some reason or other, whether you need it or not, you mix the word. At one time you said what we need and what we want. You know, what we can get away with is what it is. And this is what worries me. You know that we're in really a heck of a pickle this year with the needed programs that we have in schools and universities and fulfilling jobs to meet services. Yet if we go into this budget here, the supplemental on this is almost $70 million. And we've almost automatically met our constitutional amendment, and I'm sure there's many state employees statewide that agreed to the constitutional limit, which is 5.3 this year. Well, you're already over that. So all we can do for the next few years until the employees settle down is just feed what y'all demand or want, and then we'll always meet the constitutional limit and we'll have nothing left for serving the public. It's my worry, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, as I've indicated, and perhaps some of you may have read the quote that was attributed to me and was an accurate quote in the paper at the time that we completed one of the negotiations, in which I said some of the effect that this has been a very easy negotiations. I've been in some very hard ones in this state. At that time, I also indicated that perhaps the next go-rounds would not be quite so easy. We, in effect, took a opportunity to learn and to become prepared to meet the issues, the very issues you're talking about. COLA was not a part of this collective bargaining agreement per se, although there's a COLA problem in some of the contracts. It was already there for the last 3 years. We did not discuss COLA. We did not discuss hiring hall. We did not discuss a lot of the various items which we might have gotten into in a full negotiations. We set it off for 1 year till the administration had the opportunity to hear from the legislators, to hear from the general public and other people who have an interest in this, and can come to some agreement within their own administration as to how they want to approach many of these very tough questions. And we're not expecting to have easy negotiations in the future as we've had in this last one-time shot.
But even this is just, well, we'll settle for 5.5 for no rationale then. That's what it sounds like you're saying.
Well, there was real rationale because there were certainly much larger requests that were already at the table from these unions. They had been at the table for 2 months, and they had not only large money requests, but many other items which were policy matter or which were contractual matters, which we did not at that time feel comfortable in trying to make a hip shot decision on. And I think the administration was very wise in trying to buy some time to get into some of these matters, such as merit and such questions as that. I think it was a very wise decision to try and do something to gain that time and that knowledge.
Mr. Chairman, thanks. Representative Martin. If I may, just to add to this discussion, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make it clear that the Governor Sheffield and his administration have no objection in principle to cutting the operating budget. Our view, however, is that it is not appropriate to dishonor a collective bargaining agreement in order to accomplish that. Now, if we want to negotiate or discuss the management process involved in reducing operating expenditures of state government, that's another subject. But we don't believe that it should be couched in what we will or what we will not do to the Alaska Public Employees Association. That is, I think you're in the wrong theater. You may have the right battle, but you're in the wrong theater. And as far as what you're doing with this subcommittee's recommendation is concerned.
Jim, for me, the theater, as I see it now, is that we paid the bill. We've had no input whatsoever on it. And the theater is now, either we accept this expenditure or we don't.
Well, as I understand it,
the
collective bargaining process is done in accordance with the Alaska statutes that have been approved over the years by the legislature. So, and again, you know, if let's not be saying that the Alaska Public Employees Association has to pay the brunt of declining revenues. If we're going to talk about that subject, let's discuss that subject. If we're going to discuss the collective bargaining laws, let's have a hearing on that. But coming in and axing a salary increase line item from a budget to in order to do something, we don't even know what, doesn't seem to be an appropriate way to go about accomplishing the needs of the state to reduce its expenditures in the time of declining revenues. I mean, we're convinced that, you know, we appreciate the responsibleness of the legislature in approaching the problem, but we'd like to, encourage further dialogue on appropriate approaches, and we're not sure that there's been enough time spent on analysis by you or us to make a judgment that chopping $32 million out of collective bargaining agreements is the right way to go about it.
Representative Ward?
I know you answered, but I need to ask a couple questions. I want you to answer me again, or for me. Why did you pick 5 and 5 again?
I plead ignorance that I didn't pick it. This was picked by the administration as a possible place which would be a compromise for at least 1 year between what was really being asked for and what we might have had to negotiate for. We had on the table, as I pointed out, from the past administration, these started the actual negotiations, and all these started in October, and there were on the table at that time packages had been prepared by both the union and the management. There had been some give and take, but of course in the political arena at the time with the change of administration, nobody would really want to get that serious because of the changeover. The 5% seemed to be a logical point because of many factors, all the economic factors in the state at the time, to offer to these people as a holding pattern rather than getting the full-blown negotiations which might lead to strikes and all kinds of things than us shooting from the hip on many hard item questions.
Since then we're, you know, I'm elected and I'm, you're still in, you know, a political arena, so it, yes, could, sir, very well ought to be 10% or zero.
Could be. Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
The people who made the decision, I'm sure, were the administrative people that were responsible to make that. I just was informed about the parameters of what we should be trying to do.
So if one quick one here. I've had several people call me that are friends of mine to work with for the Employee Association, and they thought that this they thought that this 5% was not high enough. And then I had some others call and they're just talking. They said they didn't really know quite what everybody had done anyway. That they were forced to take this, that there was no negotiations, period. And then I come back to this other question. If this is not funded, two or three people that I know, what would you do? Would you go back and renegotiate?
I think it would be an unfair labor practice, but that's just a guess. I'd have to look it through. In regard to your first comment, certainly we have never presumed and will never presume to either try to second guess or speak for the various unions, associations which represent the employees in the state on how they make their internal decisions on what they're going to do in relationship to collective bargaining. That's not our job. That's really their job. So what happened between the union and membership, I really don't know. This time, I'd imagine we'd be in somewhat of an unfair labor practice, with one exception. You're right. The law stipulates that we negotiate the contracts and you fund the contracts, and that's where your role lies, and that's what you're talking about today. I recognize that.
Very realistic. Taking it back a step, I've also been under the impression that whether whoever it was is here, you get this, take it or leave it. And that's the impression I was left with. That's how the bargaining went down.
Board, we offer, as is always a common practice in the collective bargaining arena, we offered a proposal to the union representatives and we gave our rationale for that proposal. We suggested that they might want to take this 5 and 5 as a one-year agreement with the continuation of the rest of the language that was then in place in the contracts, and give us a time to really look into the very hard issues that were in those various contracts, or go into a full contract negotiations as was going on at the time, with the possibility that the administration not having time to do their research properly and not having time to make hard decisions on very hard problems might be a long, protracted, drawn out, and perhaps a lot of danger of making the wrong decisions for the right reasons. They had that choice.
One last question, if I may. If somebody's born on Christmas Day, do they get paid for that day plus another day under this new contract?
No, sir. They would take a different day off on a holiday.
Do they get paid for that day?
No, Star Rises in the evening.
This is probably the only holiday in the world where there is a money attachment, but what they would have would be a Christmas day off, which is a legal holiday. They would also have a second holiday of their choosing within a 7-day period for that holiday. That's very clear in the contract, and I thought that perhaps you might have copies of that. It states what would happen on a holiday if your birthday falls on a holiday. The biggest problem happened to be leap year, but we think we handled that one rather well.
Representative Lindauer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's always nice to hear about the state's contract negotiations, but this is a Finance Committee hearing on the state's budget, and I'd like to get back to the budget if we might.
Mr. Chairman, if I could
discuss the salary increases that were negotiated and the funding thereof and the questions at hand, which are where, if any place, is the appropriate place to put the money to fund these increases. These gentlemen have twisted this discussion away from the budget and into honoring some contract. There has never been at the subcommittee, at the Finance Committee, nor to my knowledge anywhere, any discussion of not honoring this contract. I don't know why you keep bringing it up. We're not here to discuss honoring or not honoring this contract. The question is only where will the money be put in the budget for that purpose. The chairman has recommended, I believe the Finance Committee members have accepted that recommendation, that much of that funding come from lapse in positions and vacancies. When someone leaves a job, they may not instantly hire a replacement. Funds are not always being expended. In the budget, there was much testimony about vacancies that had not been filled, budgeted vacancies that had not been filled. It is a very legitimate thing to use those monies instead of leaving them sit in the banks and carry over year after year to do this in this manner. If this Finance Committee decides that that is how it will fund the personnel, then that is how the budget recommendations will be. has nothing whatsoever to do with the topics you have brought up of honoring an agreement or anything else. We're talking about where to put the money to pay for the agreement. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just offer a comment, I think that I'd like to commend to this committee that the approach that the administration used with the in the negotiations with the employees' unions for this transition year of fiscal year 1984 might be an appropriate approach for this committee to consider for its own purposes. That in fact it might be appropriate to say, well, we will honor the agreements that were negotiated, we will permit the funding of these negotiated salary increases, and we will then sit down with the administration and the employees' unions and the public and lay out a set of guidelines. The negotiations are open again October 1 or September 1 of 1983. We have several months coming up this year to carry out these negotiations on behalf of the state of Alaska. And we would find it most useful to start with a set of guidelines for FY85 or for the pay period starting January 1, 1984 that were agreed in advance and were set in the realistic climate of what we expect revenues to be for 84 and 85. And I think that if I could just commend that as a suggestion, that we have in front of us a proposal for a way of transition from the great riches of 1981 to slightly more austere times in 1984, and that's a reasonable proposal, and that we now have the opportunity to set guidelines in all areas, not just in employee salaries, but in all areas, for the work of getting together the negotiations and budget for FY85. So I just commend you that what Mr. Stringham has told you about is not a bad example for the process that we're working on right here.
I've got Representative Pessinger and Representative Duncan, and we're going to take a vote on this thing and continue on with the bills that we got this afternoon.
Well, thank you, Director McDowell. You're a persuasive advocate. I respect that, but it doesn't change the revenue picture any. When you talk about honoring an agreement, I like the term agreement to be legally binding or legally enforceable. This one's not. If you want to talk about our collective bargaining statutes under the obligations they place upon this legislature, they're really not there. Our guidelines are to be set through funding under our Constitution, and we're trying to perform our legal obligations. I think you're mixing apples and oranges, and I do have respect for you, but we have no legally enforceable agreement here which we are facing. We are simply dealing with the realities of funding. It's a different animal.
Representative Duncan, thank you for your comments.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make a couple comments. One is that, I don't mean to put words into your mouth, but I didn't hear you say quite what Representative Lindauer said you said. And I want to be sure that I heard what you said. I appreciate Representative Lindauer's support of the public employee pay increases. But I heard you say that there was two options that you were considering. One that you would either, one, not fund the pay increases, allow present positions and not fund the increases, or two, fund the increases and ask APEA to recommend layoffs of 900 and some employees or whatever would be required to make up that difference. Am I interpreting what you said correctly?
That's correct.
As I interpret that, in neither case honors the negotiated contract that was entered into between the administration and the public employees. And I just wanted to be sure that Representative Lindauer was listening the same way I was. It didn't come out the same. Mr. Chairman, before we take a vote on this, I think that there is some information that was brought out by Mr. Stringham and others that the committee should be aware of. One, of course, is that this is not a great salary increase for public employees. And as Representative Ward indicated, I think there are some public employees who feel that this is not sufficient. I mean, this was a contract entered into, and I think as a partial sacrifice on the part of public employees in order to allow the administration more time to take a look at what was going on. Mr. Chairman, the general government unit, it's a salary increase of 4.47%, as was pointed out. For the supervisory unit, it's an increase of 4.85%.
that hardly keeps up with the cost of living, if you want to compare it with that. If you go back in history in 1979, cost of living increase was 10% in Anchorage, according to Consumer Price Index, 10.4%. The general government unit contract was 5% increase. In 1980, it was 10.2%. The general government contract increase was 8%. In 1981, it was an 8% increase in the Consumer Price Index, and the general government contract was 7.5. So in history, historically, over the past several years, public employee increases have not even kept up with cost of living increases. And, Mr. Chairman, I would submit that this is not a real great contract as far as public employees go, because it's an increase retroactively, as I said, of 4.47 in one case and 4.85, which barely keeps up with cost of living, and they haven't even done that in past years. I think we do have a commitment to honor. There's a contract negotiated in good faith. When the employees signed off, they signed off, I think, in good faith with the administration, and the administration has said that they want to honor those contracts and are urging us to do that. You know, if it was 10 or 15 or 20%, I could see that where we'd be very hesitant to do that. I think the employees have stepped back in this case and have agreed to accept a very reasonable agreement, recognizing that there is a problem with revenues, recognizing that there is a new administration that will want to take a look at the direction the state is going, and did that in good faith. And I think we should honor that by including this money here. I don't understand the need, Mr. Chairman, for any in-depth, long drawn-out hearings, as Representative Lindauer was suggesting, on these contracts. The contracts have been available for people to review and look at. They're very straightforward and I think very reasonable.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Duncan. We're on amendment number 5. The motion is by Representative Duncan and states on the salaries and benefits an increase of $38,866,000. All in favor of that motion signify by raising your hand. All opposed? Motion fails. You got any further amendments? At this time, the chair will entertain a motion to adopt the FY84 budget on the Office of the Governor and incorporate it into the operating budget.
Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt the FY84 operating budget with the Office of the Governor.
Is there any objection? There is objection. All in favor of that motion signify by raising your hand. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. The next one we're going to take up is Senate Bill 149. This bill would appropriate an additional $41 million to the Department of Revenue for the payments of the 1982 permanent fund dividends. This is the shortfall. We have here to testify Mr. Joe Donahue, Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Joe Donahue. I'm Deputy Commissioner of Revenue. Here to testify in favor of the supplemental request for $41 million to the department to pay off the balance of the 1982 dividend program. At this point in time, the department has received something more than 477,000 applications that is potentially bound to honor. It has paid out 431,000 applications, and it has a balance of the original $437 million appropriation of something slightly more than $6 million at this point in time. We're in the process of hopefully wrapping up the program over the next month or two, and we would request your expedited consideration of this supplemental so that we might be able to pay out the remaining dividend applications.
Would you answer a question for the committee? The first original Senate bill only had a figure of $39,100,000, then shortly after a month later, a new appropriation level was drafted up.
The original request was based on an estimated number of denials the department expects to implement throughout the course of the program. And the Senate State Affairs Committee and Senate Finance Committee preferred to appropriate slight excess. I mean, the total balance of applications we have right now is $40,535,000. And by appropriating $41 million, we have a slight surplus in case there's any inaccuracies in the count or any more applications than anticipated. At this point in time, there are some inaccuracies based on the number of people who file sponsor applications thinking that that was an appropriate adult application for 1982 dividends. We intend to honor them as adult applications timely filed. It's just that we haven't sorted that, we haven't made that final count yet. We believe there's 400 to 500 applications of that sort in our system. So it was, the $41 million was designed as a hedge against the uncertainties involved in the dividend denial process and the actual number of eligibles that may ultimately come forward in this program. Another uncertainty relates to those people who have claimed to have filed a timely application and who are simply not in our system at this time. We intend to allow them to file affidavits of mailing, supplemental applications in order to perfect that filing. That's a number that we estimate at less than 1,000, but that is purely speculative at this time.
Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I originally voted against this bill, and I still, this issue, and I still stand against it, but I do believe that we have an obligation, as you mentioned, to pay those who somehow ever fell through the crack and all. One of the major concerns I had, Mr. Donahue, was our military people who have, because of speed of information in Germany or Japan or whatever, the Stars and Stripes didn't publish the Alaska dividend. A lot of servicemen did not get the word, as you know, until very late. It's my understanding that they're still not covered. Is there something we can do, or has the department done something to cover the military men overseas that, in all honesty, fell through the cracks?
Representative Martin, we have done everything we can to get applications to those people in the military who solicited one prior to the deadline. And we would consider a letter of inquiry from somebody in that position sufficient to meet the deadline, but it would still require supplemental information to perfect the application. If they did not know about the program prior to the deadline, and they just found out about it, say, recently, they would be ineligible under the current law for the dividend, unless the period is reopened by statute.
Mr. Chairman, it was the department's report I read. I think Mrs. Brown brought up this problem and said that next time what we're going to do, the reason why I remember the Stars and Stripes, they said we're going to advertise in the Stars and Stripes about it. And so obviously the department has admitted there had been a breakdown in communication, which is understandable, and these people did not know what was happening until Alaska, until after the deadline. Did you say we need legislation now to extend that for a specific group?
If the intent of the committee would be to allow military people who were uninformed about the program, who missed the deadline, if you want to render them eligible for the 1982 program, we would need legislation.
Thank you.
Would you, for the committee, tell them where this money is coming from, you know, from the permanent fund, and what's the balance of that, so we all have a good understanding of that?
At this point in time, the members of the committee could turn to attachment D in the handout that we prepared prior to the hearing. The permanent fund dividend fund, which was established by the original dividend legislation, required transfer half of the distributable income from the permanent fund earnings into the dividend fund account for distribution as dividends. And attachment D shows a balance as of 12/30/82 of $45.8 million, which includes interest on those 50% distributions into the dividend fund.
These were money originally anticipated to be used for the dividend program, and in fact originally viewed as dedicated to the dividend program. The backstop legislation took dividend fund monies from FY82 and FY83 and suggested or dedicated them for the payments of the 1983 distribution. So the legislation did not indicate how the FY80 and FY81 contributions to the dividend funds were to be utilized. Again, in the original estimates of the departments for the underlying the durational residency programs for 1979 and 1980 included both the general fund appropriation, and it assumed we had access to these monies as part of the distribution. So this is consistent with the original underlying intent of the distribution program.
Thank you very much. Representative Flood.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Donahue, this $41 million, is this for those people who have filed in a timely fashion before the deadline?
Yes. Mostly it is for the people who have timely filed and who have not yet been processed at this time. We are also initiating an administrative procedure to allow people who have written us letters claiming that they have filed